Welcome. I'm Sarah Pollock.
And I'm Quinn Faison. And we're parent coaches at Plan P, where we believe in the power of practice.
As parents, we have been there through the teen years. And sometimes being there was a rough road. We learned the P was for many things, and always for practice, patience, and pause. From burping a baby to parenting emerging adult children, there is no right or wrong way. We're humans. We learn by doing.
The work that we do now as coaches has the full support and approval of our amazing children and our greatest teachers, Allie and Harrison. So if you're a parent, you've come to the right place. We're going to give you tools to practice clear communication with your children, which will improve your relationships.
We're excited to have you join us on this parenting path that passes through the adolescent years, where learning is in the pause and perfection is found in practicing. So let's get moving. Hello and welcome back to the Plan P podcast. We are so once again humbled and happy to have you here. Welcome.
Yeah, we enjoy doing this. And this week we thought we'd talk about Jonathan Haidt. He just came out with a new book. So he's been on a lot of talk shows and in the paper and love his theories.
Yeah, the new book is called
The Anxious Generation.
We have not read it yet. If you want to see any of the books that we've read, just an aside, you can go onto our resources page. And down at the bottom, there are all the books that we have read so you don't have to. And we will add The Anxious Generation.
Although he also wrote Coddling of the American Mind, which I also want to read, and something about righteous
thinking. The righteous mind.
Anyway, he's a social anthropologist. He looks at societies and has this interesting take.
Right. So what the coddling of the American mind is about is how we're back to that thing of like, you get an award just for participating.
Right.
And what that has brought about, and he talks about this focused on social media, but it references the coddling of the American mind, which really talks about how much fear we live in that the kids aren't going to be all right.
Right.
I mean, that's my very broad stroke.
So he talks about three ideas, and one of them is that we are fragile in terms of debate, in terms of ideas. So you shouldn't say something that might hurt somebody's feelings or that they would disagree with because that might hurt their feelings. So there's this level of fragility that stops conversation, stops trying to understand a different point of view.
Oh, yeah. It actually prevents communication. Right. I just was talking to someone the other day who said, you know, they do this thing that annoys me, but you know what? I think they probably do it, because they're feeling blah, 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 which means that that person isn't speaking their truth and they're not actually seeing or hearing the other person. They can't come to a common understanding because there's no communication.
Yeah.
And I think that in some ways we parents do that.
I have to say some of our hardest conversations, just you and me, is when I'm expressing something that I don't understand.
About me?
Well, about something you're doing. And you interpret my asking about something as me saying you're doing it wrong. Whereas I feel like you keep not doing it the way I think it should be done. Let's come to a place. And I'm sure I ask it in an accusatory, why do you do that? But those end up being our hardest, even though it's usually not about anything that's a big deal, how the toilet paper is on the roll. Or
we did have that conversation, didn't we?
Yes. It's always very small things. Oh. And yet those can be very hard conversations because our feelings get hurt.
Yes. And I think that what happens, getting back to this guy I was talking to the other day, and also just to general relationships, particularly mm-hmm. with kids, is I go in wanting to be heard.
Right.
And what happens then sometimes is I'm not listening. And I, when someone else asks me why I do it that way, because my immediate reaction is they're asking me this because they know something I don't know. And ooh, they think I did it the wrong way. And there we are. We're off into the thinking game.
Right.
And I am reacting to your telling me what you didn't tell me, which is that I'm doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And that's my default thinking. I take responsibility for my awareness that my thinking isn't helping.
Right.
It's in helping me respond ably to your question. And I do want to just put a pin in this notion of asking why is always a tricky one, which is why I try and never use why. Mm. Doesn't mean I don't do it. But it does mean I really try hard to say, Tell me what. And then I try really hard, and I sometimes don't succeed in this, in listening. I think I know best. I want to dominate the conversation. So,
well, yes, trying to not hurt somebody's feelings is not a good way to have communication.
Right. So how are you feeling? It's a question we can ask.
Yes.
I have a feeling. Here's my feeling. Look at our resources page. There's an I feel statement. Because understanding my feeling, I can do that usually not with my kid. We talk about our feelings about what the kids are doing.
Mm.
They're adults. They get to live their lives. Harrison came to us and said, I'm going to tell you this. You're not going to like it.
Yeah, that was a good opening.
And what they were doing, just full disclosure, was they've got this dream of being an MMA fighter.
And since we didn't really like the idea of football because he might get a concussion, he knew that MMA was not going to be in top 10 of things we wanted him to be doing.
And he's an adult, over 18.
Yes.
And I think that as a parent, it's tricky to understand that they are my responsibility. They aren't my responsibility. And legally, that actually happens in a minute.
Right.
Which is sort of crazy. But again, putting a pin in it, you and I were talking the other day about preventive. What we hope to do with parents is work to help them prevent the reading of minds to start happening.
Right.
Not wanting to hurt their feelings.
In order to prevent them from being hurt emotionally, physically, we protect them. And this generation has been perhaps overprotected. So they don't know how to approach things that are difficult. Because you have a different idea than me. I mean, I don't think of people having a different idea than me being painful.
Pain of having your beliefs, because they're beliefs a lot of the time. I mean,
right.
What he talks about a lot is what's going on in college camps.
Having your beliefs questioned is painful to them.
Right. We're all sensitive, but we've become in some ways oversensitive. Culture.
It's become the cultural idea that you need to protect people. This whole debate, what kids should be able to read, what version of history we teach. The debate is set up in this idea of protecting kids from feeling badly. Whatever side you're on, you think you are doing it to protect kids from feeling hurt, feeling othered. And there we are again in the right wrong.
So I have a true confession. When I was coddling my child, there we have it. I am a coddler. I don't actually remember when I coddled them because I coddled them probably so much because I wanted to protect them from pain. And I thought I was raising them in a very upright, honest, moral way. And I had a conversation with Allie in December, I want to say, when we went away on our mini vacation, in which I said something about the topic of slavery and how my feeling is that it has permeated us ever since. We just get to own the past, take responsibility, and move forward. And Allie looked at me and said, really? That's the way you feel? Because you told me that I wasn't responsible for slavery because, you know, we have ancestors that were Jewish and therefore we didn't own slaves. My point being, I told them something in a moment of their feeling excessive responsibility. They are a very sensitive human. They have been that way since birth. I don't remember doing that, coddling them. But Alex was very clear in that moment that I had told them. And I know that to see them experiencing the pain of 400 years, they were in high school probably at that point. So they were studying that and feeling very responsible because they are a very responsible human being, which causes them pain. And part of the coddling of the American mind means that there is an increase in pain in our country. There is a spike.
There's an increase in depression, anxiety, and
self-harm, suicide, mental health in general. And that spike started happening in 2012, more or less. And social media does expose us. I mean, it used to be that you got the newspaper,
right,
or you turned on the news, and those people sort of filtered it. So you weren't assaulted. You couldn't spend 8 hours a day looking at the trauma that is happening everywhere. It's in our city, it's in our state, it's in our country, it's in the water, it's worldwide. And where do I focus on now? I mean, when we were in high school, we had Live Aid or college, which was, there was a crisis, a humanitarian crisis going on in this one particular place. And a lot of people felt impassioned and gave them a little degree of, we felt that we could help somewhere.
Right.
I think that people are feeling very helpless. There's nowhere they can impact change. That's Sarah's theory.
I think that that's a good theory. There is something to being able to have an effect. And that goes to the resiliency, that idea that, you know, bad things happen and we can do something, move on, you know, get through it. The different things require different reactions, but this idea that it doesn't end here. We're not stuck here forever.
Right. And the other thing, we want instant gratification. We want instant this. I want Amazon to drop it. We want to see results. And as we say at the end of every single podcast.
Yeah.
Change takes time. You can't invest in the stock market today and be a millionaire tomorrow.
So in our current context, that immediacy that you were talking about, it's frustrating because we think it should happen fast. And the silos in which we get our information and understand the world. So not only is it moving slowly, but the other people,
the perceived other people on the perceived other team, I'm using air quotes, separating us.
Yes, it's polarizing us. And some of that is that the information is siloed. I see what I click on.
And this is where communication comes in. Let's talk about this. I don't want to coddle you. I want to trust you. Let's build this relationship.
Right.
I think it takes a lot of courage to be able to be the parent who doesn't. Even when our kids were kids, they were like, so-and-so's parents this, so-and-so's parents that. And so we can come back together as communities, as school parents, not pointing fingers, not saying, look at what my child did. Because that's the fear. That's back to the parenting peer pressure.
Right.
There's some parent who is better than me. I'm here to say there are billions of people on earth. There are billions of better parents than me. But they're not parenting my kids. They're not parenting your kids. You are your child's parent and you are the perfect parent for that child. I think that that's one of our core beliefs at Plan P. You are the right parent for that child.
You know your child best. You know your situation best.
Right.
So there's nobody who can do it better than you.
Right. So how do you do this? Uncoddle? Unwrap the bubble wrap?
Well, and I think, you know, we talk about unwrapping the bubble wrap a little bit.
I think we talk about it in some ways all the time.
Yes.
Because it's being honest about our ability to protect them.
Well, and it's about improving the communication and making it okay to talk about feelings, good and bad feelings, and make space for those feelings without trying to push them away. I mean, I think some of the coddling is that we try not to have them have bad feelings rather than helping them get through bad feelings.
Right. Seeing that they are allowed to have feelings and pausing frequently.
And as we say, learning from mistakes, learning from, I got to this place where I'm having a bad feeling. How did I get here? Or how can I do it differently? And that's for everybody in the situation, right? Because all situations in relationships are created by both parties or all parties. So it's never 100% one person's fault. It may be mostly somebody's fault, but I always have a part to play in my response or in my letting it get there or in my not addressing it early. I mean, there's always something I could maybe do differently next time.
Well, and I think you've touched on something there because as parents, our biggest fear is that it's all our fault. And as they become teenagers in the preteen years, we are panicked that we have blown it. And I gave them a cell phone at 10. But if we start being afraid that we were the cause of it.
Well, and one of the things that I said to Allie recently, which I mean, I say this jokingly, but I also believe, is we haven't done our job correctly if we haven't made mistakes. Because we need to make mistakes to show them that you can move beyond the mistakes that you've made and how to correct the mistakes and all the things that come with mistakes, taking responsibility for the mistakes that we've made. We have to model all that, demonstrate all that. So we haven't done our job if we haven't
prepared them for therapy.
Prepared them for therapy, right. I also think therapy is a great thing. And if I'm the excuse, that's great. Then I've given them a good reason to go.
If they want it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the tricky thing about the teen years and mistakes. If I can't admit I made mistakes, you know what I can't do? I can't learn from my mistakes.
Right.
And that is where wrapping them in bubble wrap, where they can't actually, you can't hear and you can't really breathe in there in that bubble wrap when we're not listening. And there's so many opportunities to breathe and not panic. But we, as they enter the preteen, teen, and young adult years, we tend to panic more because, oh, we messed up to date. And now how do we cover that up? There's so many parents afraid of so many things. I should have worked. I shouldn't have worked. I should have.
There's any number of things that you could have done differently if you had only known. If you had done it differently, there would be other things that you would want to do differently if you had only known.
And as they are emerging adults, it's not about us anymore.
Right.
And that's what starts happening. happening is, I believe, as parents, and I can only speak from my own experience and talking to lots of parents, of course, too, my awareness around myself, and that my fear that I had done something wrong, that the divorce had had an impact, that I could not take away that pain. Not my job to take away the pain.
Right.
It's my parenting responsibility to love them,
right,
and to listen to them and let them know, do you want to be held? Do you want to cry? I still imagine my mother singing me lullabies sometimes.
Mm.
My mother isn't even here on earth any longer. But sometimes we want our mother to do something. And some people have a mother who didn't do those things because we're all sort of working from our model of what our parents gave us or didn't give us, and right, how much we want to focus on what they did or didn't give us. And I 100% know that my parents did the best they could. Did they do harm? And my dad listens to these. So you always want to know, Dad, I'm sure you did harm. I'm sure you didn't mean to.
I was going to say, and even the divorce example, right? It caused them pain that you got divorced. If you hadn't gotten divorced, that might also have caused them pain. So that's what I'm talking about, that no matter what road you choose, there are going to be painful things,
yes,
or hard things or mistakes made. And since there is no way to do life perfectly, you are going to make mistakes. And so it's the decision isn't how to keep them from ever feeling bad or hurt, or me feeling like I could have done better. It's like, no, I have done what looked like the caring thing to do in the moment that I was doing it.
Right. Which meant in a lot of parents who divorce, and I've spoken with a lot of parents who've mm-hmm. divorced, a lot of what we are trying to do is act like we're going to do the best we can, and we don't want to hear about their pain. And then some people only want to focus on their pain,
right,
of their children. You have to go to therapy, and you have to do this, and you have to do that, because I know you're going to feel pain. Backing off. And absolutely. I mean, one of the reasons I ended up separating from the other parent was like, this wasn't a healthy relationship between the two of us, even if we loved each other, which we did. It wasn't what I wanted to model. I didn't want my kids to see that as a model of a healthy relationship, because it wasn't that healthy.
Right.
Doesn't mean it wasn't healthy to begin with. We entered into it. We had children because that's what we wanted. Things change. So letting the kids have feelings and being there as a safe, listening human.
Right.
That's the thing about letting them emerge as adults and not wanting them to isolate away from you.
Right.
Finding that balance where you are the consistent, not shaming, not telling them how to do it, but having the conversation. Back to family dinners.
Right.
If you're not doing family dinners, strongly suggest that you figure out a way to sit down with your family minimum of 4 times a week.
And in a way that's just regular and not pressured. So
right, not family meetings.
A meal with your family is an easy way to do it. There
right.
are other game nights and, you know, other ways to engage your family as a family. Making sure that it works for you and your family so that there's regular contact that's easy.
Right, that's not pressured.
Right.
That sometimes is light, sometimes is heavy. It's funny because this is one of those places where, look, yes, I did that. We mm-hmm. had dinner together
almost
every night.
Yeah.
And I told the kids they weren't had to cook once a week, and that definitely didn't happen.
No.
Just so you know, you're not going to do anything perfectly because we're human, to your point earlier.
Well, and I think actually one of Jonathan Haidt's points is that to see the other as human is to not take personally what they do.
Right.
So one of the other advantages of highlighting your own mistakes is that people get to see that other people are human. And so I didn't do this thing to hurt you. I just did this thing and it hurt you. And I'm sorry.
Right. And not over-explaining, not getting defensive.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if I tell you, you know what, I did this thing, I'm sorry. And you say, yeah, you did. And you didn't see me at all. And you blah, 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 blah. And I can just listen, not react.
Right. You know, it goes back to the idea of defenselessness.
Hmm. You go into the ring without your gloves.
Well, the idea that if I'm punching back, then I'm agreeing with them that this was a heinous thing I did rather than just a mistake I made. We give people power when we defend ourselves.
Yep. We could keep talking about this forever because I'm thinking of Martin Luther King and Mahatma Gandhi. And
yeah, these are basic spiritual ideas.
So what's the practice for this week?
The practice for this week is to take advantage of family time, whether that's family dinners or
something you do, but so that you're in relaxed conversation with your kid and just asking, and how do you feel about that when something comes up? And just make little space for them talking about their feelings with you.
So remember,
change takes
lots and lots of time.
And
patience, lots of patience.
And
practice, 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 practice.
Thank you for tuning in to Plan P. We hope you enjoyed this episode and gained some valuable takeaways that you can practice this week. And remember, change takes time.
To stay connected with us and ensure you never miss an episode, make sure to subscribe and share our podcast with your friends, family, and other parents who could benefit from these discussions. Also, please be sure to leave us a review on Apple or Spotify, because that will help us reach more amazing parents like you.
If you want to talk to us one-on-one or learn other ways in which we support families, visit our website at planp.us. You can also keep up with Plan P on Instagram and TikTok at Plan P is 4.
We will meet you back here next week.